Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of From My Point of View. The play-in tournament is officially set. Frank Vogel gets fired by Adrian Wojnarowski before the Lakers actually get a chance to tell him. The Masters, Tiger Woods, Scottie Scheffler, winning it all. He dominated from Thursday to Sunday, easily shot the best. Rory McIlroy did make a push on Sunday. I believe he finished three strokes back of Scheffler, but Scheffler, just 25 years old, from New Jersey, actually, also. He is the third most recent golfer, 25 and under, to win the Masters. Before him, it was Jordan Spieth back in 2015, who was just 21 years old. And then Tiger in 97 won it at 21 years old. That was the first time he won the Masters. His second time, he was also under 25 years old. Jack Nicklaus won it under 23 and also at 25. Tiger Woods in 01, he was also 25 years old. A couple other people won it back in like the 30s when they were 25 years old. So it's a short list. It's only 10 golfers on that list. Nicklaus is on there a couple times, as is Tiger Woods. So 10 names, 10 different years of under 25 golfers winning the Masters, but 8 different players. So huge accomplishment for Scottie Scheffler, obviously etching his name in the history books. Again, pretty dominant throughout. He struggled a bit, I believe on Saturday, I think it was. He struggled the most, but was able to bounce back. He had a good Sunday, and it was good enough to keep Rory McIlroy off his tail. And it was funny because on Friday, I think Rory was like not shooting well. And I think I mentioned to my friends, I was like, what happened to Rory McIlroy? I feel like I haven't heard his name in a while, like in terms of winning any tournaments or things like that. And it was the truth. I mean, I don't think he had won anything in a while. And then, of course, now I said that and he ends up finishing second in the Masters. So solid bounce back for Rory McIlroy. But just for Tiger, I'm not sure anyone really expected him to win it. But he had a great first day. His Thursday was really good. Struggled a bit on Friday. Bounced back enough to make the cut. And then Saturday, Sunday, you know, he wasn't even really close to being in it. I really do think that first day drained him physically. But overall, just for him to be able to play in the entire tournament, his legs still be like underneath him, and for him to make it through there after everything that happened with his car accident, and for him to be able to play, be able to bring that coverage to the Masters, people rooting for him, like wanting him to succeed, and just, even though, again, even though he didn't win anything, just seeing him out there doing his thing, being Tiger Woods. He's out there on Sunday wearing red. Like, it's a good feeling to see him be able to do that. And he had those in his statement as well after the fact that he was just, the fact that he was just able to get through it all and be there and play golf is a huge, huge accomplishment. He did commit to playing at the Open Championship at St. Andrews in July. But the next major that's up is the PGA Championship in May. He did not commit to playing to that just yet because it's just a little over a month away. And obviously after everything with the Masters, he'll have to see how he's feeling and if he's up to it or if he has to maybe take some rest and then gear up for the Open Championship, which he has committed to playing in the Open Championship. But the PGA Championship is still to be decided for him. My guess is that he will just skip it. He has said that he will not play a full PGA Tour schedule. But so I'm thinking like every other, you know. So he played in the Masters, which is obviously the big one that he really wanted to play in. Regardless of how his performance was going to go, he just wanted to get through it, which he did. Made the cut, which is huge. He has the highest percentage of, since the cut was introduced to the Masters, he has made it more than anyone else, like percent. I think he has 96 or 97% of the time he's played in the Masters, he's made the cut, which I think only amounts to one time he's missed the cut in his career. So that was huge. Skipping the PGA might be a necessary thing for him to gear up for the Open Championship if he wants to compete as well as he can, you know? But happy for Tiger. Very happy for Scottie Scheffler. Again, he played amazing golf this past weekend and kind of ran away with it. From start to finish, he seemed to be the best golfer out there. There's no easy way to acknowledge the death of an athlete and then continue on with a podcast, you know? But Dwayne Haskins, just 24 years old, Ohio State quarterback, standout, played for Washington, was currently on the Steelers. He passed away after getting hit by a truck on a highway in Florida, I believe he was in. And he was announced dead on the scene. Horrible. Horrible, horrible, horrible circumstances. Just being so young. Who cares about football at that point, right? Like, he's a kid. I'm older than Dwayne Haskins. Like, that's how I look at it. He's literally a kid, man. It's just, it's bad. It's horrible. It's horrible. I don't think they released any other details other than he was in the emergency pull-off lane and then apparently tried to cross the highway for some reason, unknown. Yeah, and he collided with a vehicle. It's tough. It's really sad. And just seeing all the wonderful heartfelt messages from all these people that knew him was great to see. Adam Scheffner's in hot water again because for some reason he felt the need to tweet out that he struggled in the NFL. And then it was something like, he deleted the tweet, but it was Dwayne Haskins, Ohio State standout, who struggled to break in the NFL with Washington and Pittsburgh, died this morning after being hit by an oncoming vehicle. And everyone was like, he's just a kid. Like, regardless if it's true or not, bro, like, you're not, it's not the right, you can't be doing that, man. You can't be, like, this is like the third or fourth very sensitive topic that Adam Scheffner has butchered in the past year. He butchered the Deshaun Watson thing. He butchered the Dalvin Cook thing. Obviously, the whole investigation with Washington and Dan Snyder was not a good look for him either. Like, the journalistic integrity of Adam Scheffner right now is, it you keep thinking like it can't get any lower, and it does. It just keeps getting lower. And part of me thinks that he might act, even though he's a journalist, quote unquote journalist, like someone might have to edit his tweets before he hits send. It's gotten to that point, man. Like, I don't understand how ESPN can keep defending this dude. And he's, if you really think about it, he's really not a journalist anymore. He's more of just like a talking piece, like, who relays information to the masses. He's not investigating anything. He's not reporting on anything. It's literally like teams and agents and other people. Like, you have you noticed that Ian Rappaport is less, he does the same thing as Adam Scheffner, but he's not, he hasn't been making the mistakes that Scheffner has been making. But he's a talking piece too, essentially. But like, they both get emails or text messages from agents. And have you noticed now that every big free agency signing, they tag the agent that is doing it? It's like a publicity thing. It's very weird. It's very, very, very weird. But yeah, he has gotten a lot of his integrity as a journalist called into question over the past year. Specifically, it has not been a good look for Adam Schefter. I'm not sure how he is really going to combat this, because I don't think he doesn't apologize, which is the thing that I think most people really see, is that he tweets and then he'll delete it. Oh, here it is. 20 hours ago. An apology and tribute to Dwayne Haskins.
First, I wanted to address the death of Dwayne Haskins and the tweet that I posted this weekend. It was insensitive. It was a mistake. And I can assure you, it is not my intention. I wish I could have that tweet back. The focus should have been on Dwayne, who he was as a person, a husband, a friend, and so much more. I wanted to apologize to Dwayne's family, his friends, the players in the National Football League.
You get the gist. It's 3.5 minutes of an apology. That's a clip that's on his Twitter, but it is from his podcast. So there's your apology, I guess. Before that, it was 3 days ago. So it took him 3 days to apologize or to address it, to apologize on his podcast. It wasn't even a tweet, but I guess because he wanted to say it with his actual voice, not in just writing. So he apologized. That's good. But it's still it's tough. It's a tough look. It's a tough look. A lot of people got on for that. It was not right. Now, I did start out by saying he was an Ohio State standout and was a quarterback for Washington and the Steelers. All those are facts. Obviously, where Schefter messed up is you don't highlight a man's failings in the same tweet that you announce his death. It feels like that should be common knowledge, but clearly there was a lapse in judgment from Adam Schefter. Don't want to harp on that anymore, but Dwayne Haskins is the story there, and it is tragic. It's an open investigation, so I don't believe any more details than what we got on Sunday have been released, and they probably won't be for a little while. Why was he pulled over? Why did he try to cross the road? What were the circumstances? Because obviously, pulling over on the side of the highway and trying to cross it with oncoming traffic is an unusual circumstances. So, was he with anyone? I don't know if he was with anyone. There's some questions that's why did this happen? You know, because it wasn't a car accident. He was out of his car, pulled over. So it's just very unfortunate and a very tragic incident. Again, he's just a 24-year-old kid. Everyone spoke very highly of him. The one that particularly hit me pretty hard was Terry McLaurin, who played with him at Ohio State and also with Washington. So he had been teammates with him in college, in the pros, and had gotten to know him, obviously, very well. It's tough. Very, very, very tough. Ryan Day, the current Ohio State head football coach, told a story about how Dwayne Haskins walked into Ohio State's locker room as a 12-year-old kid and said, "I'm going to play here one day." And he did. And he was phenomenal. He was one of the best college quarterbacks in the country at that time when he played. So he was an unbelievable quarterback there. Just tragic. Very, very, very tragic and heartbreaking that something like this happened. So rest in peace, Dwayne Haskins. Again, it's always weird to talk about that kind of stuff and then try and move on with the rest of the podcast like it's normal. But I'm going to try. So here we go. Later in the podcast, we'll have my boy Pete on, also an Animal House contributor. He will be on. We'll talk about MLB opening weekend to round out the show. And also hockey. Pete Knows Puck. He's trademarking that. Pete Knows Puck. We'll talk about the Rangers clinching a playoff spot. How good is this team? Are they the best team that the Rangers have had in years? How far can they get in the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera? All that good stuff. And then he's a huge Mets fan, so we'll talk about Mets, Yankees, opening day thoughts from both of our ends. I also watched the Mets. I don't know if he watched the Yankees, but I have some thoughts on the Mets as well. Surprises, sleepers that we like this year, even though I'm kind of on record already saying what I think. In terms of sleepers. And yeah, that'll be our segment together at the end of the show that we'll get covering some hockey and then MLB opening weekend. For now, the NBA play-in tournament and Adrian Wojnarowski. I have a problem with this. I've had some problems with these breaking news journalists recently. So after the Lakers' final game of the season, Woj took to Twitter to say that Frank Vogel has unofficially coached his last game for the Lakers. The organization had not announced anything yet, but Woj apparently had concrete evidence, concrete source, that Frank Vogel was going to be fired. And this happened 2 days before he actually got fired. It was like a whole story. He tweeted it. He's going to be fired. Who's going to be the next coach? Now, initially, I remember last week talking about this, that I think it was Jake Fisher for Bleacher Report said that it looks like Vogel's time with the Lakers is coming to an end. Like, not skepticism. What is it? Theorizing, right? Like, you're looking at it and you're like, okay, this partnership looks like it's nearing towards its end. Frank Vogel, I think everyone kind of could have pieced it together that he was going to be fired. This was his last go around with the Lakers. It looks like this partnership had ran its course. Who could potentially replace him as head coach? Woj then, like 2 days later, took it a step further and said, Frank Vogel is getting fired. Like, set it in stone. He's already fired. The impending, he wrote a whole story on it also. It's like an article on his Twitter. The impending firing of Frank Vogel. Now, he turned out to be correct, which I'm not surprised about at all. But what I have a problem with is, like, you're now taking it a step further. You're not just saying, oh, it is heavily thought that Frank Vogel will be relieved of his duties as Lakers head coach after this season. No, that's not what he said. It said Frank Vogel is going to be fired as the Lakers coach, sources said. Lakers have not announced anything yet. Someone brought it up to Frank Vogel. He's like, no one's talked to me. During the season closing press conference for the Lakers, someone asked LeBron and he was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Now, obviously they could, not Frank Vogel, but LeBron could be bullshitting. We don't know if he's lying or not, whether he knew or not that Frank Vogel was going to be fired, but he said, that's not my decision. I'm not aware of any decisions that have been made yet. But it was like 2 whole days that Woj tweeted about Vogel being fired and then the Lakers actually firing him. Now, I remember watching ESPN when this is all unfolding again, and I believe it was Tim Legler, and I want to say it was Tim Legler. I'm like 99% sure it was Tim Legler, who got on ESPN and said that it's a bad look for the Lakers because Woj, as a reporter, had such concrete evidence that he let the general public know that Frank Vogel was going to be fired before the Lakers did anything, and that's a bad look on the Lakers. Whereas I'm looking at it as a side as, well, clearly there's like someone in the Lakers organization that is leaking information to Woj. Whether it's on purpose or behind closed doors, I don't know. But clearly it's good enough evidence, and that person is privy to a lot of the inner workings of the Lakers organization, that Woj tweeted that with full confidence, and it ended up being true. So that's one problem, in my opinion, because tweeting breaking news and then tweeting things before they happen when it comes to someone's job is a little, it's a gray line for me. It's just odd. It's just very odd. And I don't know if that necessarily reflects bad on the Lakers if they haven't announced anything yet because they wanted to talk to Frank Vogel. Like, sometimes it undermines the organization. It's like, you don't know what their plans are. Maybe they wanted to have the closing press conferences. They wanted to have all of that. And then after everything was wrapped for them officially, they would be like, hey, Frank, listen, we're going to move in a different direction. And that would be the end of it. But now you have Woj, who millions of people follow, completely undercut him or undercut the Lakers. And it put, I don't really feel bad for the Lakers, but it does put them in a weird position with their hands tied behind their back. And they're like, hey, sorry you didn't hear it from us. You had to hear it from Adrian Wojnarowski that you're being fired. That's our bad. It's just, it's the Lakers. Like, if this was any other team, you'd be like, ah, typical dysfunction. But, like, this is the Lakers. They're only a couple years removed from a championship. And that's another thing, which is odd, right? Like, Frank Vogel won a championship with this team. And you can throw whatever at the wall and see if it sticks. Like, ah, it was in the bubble. It was during COVID. Like, you had a whole break. That's why the Lakers were good. They didn't have to worry about injuries, yada, 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 all this nonsense. Like, people try to denounce that ring. Counts the same as anything else. Doesn't matter if it happened in a bubble or not. But it was like, it's the Lakers, right? This is a very historic and prestigious franchise. And clearly now that Woj tweets that, there's some dysfunction there. And obviously they had a very disappointing season and all that. So it was just a weird scenario. When I read Woj's tweet, I just thought it was odd, right? It was just very strange that this guy is tweeting about a coach being fired before the coach had actually been fired. I don't know if he's ever done that before. That's the thing, right? Usually when he tweets it, it's like breaking news. So-and-so team fires head coach blank, right? Like, that's usually how it goes. And he's the first guy to be on it, where, like, the organization will let him know, someone in the organization will let him know and be like, listen, we're going to fire so-and-so right now. You can tweet it out. Whereas this was, like, clearly the Lakers, someone leaked it to him that he was being fired. He trusted that source enough to tweet it, and then the Lakers were kind of screwed, and a couple days later, they had to fire Frank Vogel, but he clearly had already known that it was coming. Or at the very least was like, is this real or not? You know, it's very strange. Very strange scenario. As for the play-in tournament, I am recording this on Tuesday, so by the time you're listening to this, these games will have already been decided, but the Wednesday slate of games will still have yet to be played. So we have the 7th versus 8th seed. I always like lisp that whenever I say it too fast. The 7th versus 8th seed playing games for the East and the West. Cavs, Nets. The Nets are the home team. And the Clippers, Timberwolves in the West. That's at 9:30. Cavs, Nets is at 7. Who knows if I'm right or not, but I think the Nets will beat the Cavs, and I think the Timberwolves will beat the Clippers. Those are my two picks. We'll see how they pan out. In hindsight, when you're listening to this, I could have been right. I could have been wrong. We'll see what happens. But I really like the Timberwolves this year. Karl Anthony Towns has taken a huge step up. The Clippers, of course, still they have no Kawhi Leonard. He's not going to play for the entire year. Like, he's done, obviously. Luke Kennard's also out for tonight. So Timberwolves at full strength. Clippers are not. They did get Paul George back, who has been playing really well in the minutes he's been getting since returning. So obviously that's a huge plus for them. And simply because of that, you can't count the Clippers out. They've been pretty scrappy all year just to get to 42-40 without, pretty much without Paul George for 90% of the year and without Kawhi Leonard for the entire year. Ty Lue deserves a lot of credit for getting this team into the play-in game, for getting them above 500 without their two star players. It's no small feat what he has done, truthfully. And I have been a very big criticizer of Ty Lue just because of what happened in Cleveland. Yes, he was there. He won a championship. But like shortly after that, he was fired. Like after LeBron left and all that, like I thought he was a coach of circumstances, really. But he has proven this year that he could be a good coach even without star players. Shout out Reggie Jackson as well. Reggie Jackson has played out of his mind this year. 17 a game. He's gone on. Like, guy has fun out there. Like, when he is on fire and everything's dropping and he can get wherever he wants on the court, he is one of the most fun players to watch because he's dancing. He's skipping across the court, dribbling. Just all types of showmanship and showboating. It's really, really fun to watch. We'll see if they are able to continue the run. I think the Timberwolves, they finished 46-36. And it's crazy that they're playing the Clippers, who are 42-40, right? Like, but Minnesota will... I like them. I like Minnesota. I like Kat. I like D'Lo. Anthony Edwards, obviously, is super fun to watch. So, they have a lot. Like, if you told me the Timberwolves wouldn't win a playoff series this year, like, I wouldn't be totally surprised based on matchups. So, I'm pulling for the Timberwolves. I think the Nets, they should have an easy time with Cleveland. They should. But Cleveland has been very good all year. They've been very scrappy. Had a tough second half of the year. They ended up finishing 44-38, obviously the same as Brooklyn. They were as high as the 3 seed this year, and they did have a tough second half and fell down into the rankings, and now they ended in the play-in tournament. So that's tough to see it for them. I really thought they were going to be able to avoid the play-in tournament. But they just missed out there for that one. And Brooklyn made a terrific stretch towards the end of the season to get that 7 seed and secure that home court advantage in that game versus Cleveland. And Chicago is a team that they slipped so far too, because you have Miami, Boston, Milwaukee, Philly. Boston, Milwaukee, Philly all finished 51-31, so it's really just about records, I think, against each other and tiebreakers and stuff. So Miami's number one, Boston, Milwaukee, Philly. Then you have Toronto, who finished 5th, and Chicago finished 6th. They had probably the worst second half. Like, it really bad for them. They have Brooklyn, Cleveland. Wednesday, as you're listening to this, the games that are on tonight, 7 o'clock, you have the Hornets and the Hawks. I'm pulling for the Hornets. I would love to see LaMelo Ball go further and try and get into that. I would love to see the Hornets make the playoffs, period, to see LaMelo and that team. They're electric on offense. Obviously, defensively, they have much to be desired. But they're playing the Hawks, Trae Young. That's the 9 versus 10 seed. And then at 9:30, the Spurs and the Pelicans. I'm a big fan of the Spurs. I've always been a big fan of the Spurs. They have fallen off recently with their rebuild. But DeJounte Murray has had an all-star. Personally, I think he should make All-NBA. That's just me. I think he's third-team All-NBA. The way I see it right now as it stacks up, you have Ja Morant and Devin Booker, first team. Luka and Steph were second team, but now Steph, I don't know, because he missed like the last month and a half of the season. He got off to an unbelievably hot start. He did fall off a little bit, and then he got injured. So I don't know if that robs him. Actually, he might not even, how many games did he play this year? He might not have even enough games to qualify. I think you have to play 58 games for all statistical milestones. Okay, he did. He played in 64 games, so he qualifies. So he could be second team All-NBA. Luka's definitely there. I think it's Devin Booker, Ja Morant, Luka. But try and make an argument for any other guard in the league that's better than DeJounte Murray. Like, he, I think I saw on StatMuse the other day, the only guards to ever average 25, 8, and 8 in a single season. Oh, no, excuse me. It was 20 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, and 2 steals per game in a season, minimum 40 games. Michael Jordan and DeJounte Murray. He could do it all. 28 and 8 and 2 steals. DeJounte Murray. Like, how are you going to look at me and say that he's not one of the best guards in the league right now? I know the Spurs struggle, but they're in the play-in at 34 and 48, which is not, you know, obviously that's not great. But DeJounte Murray is a bright, bright, bright star. He really is. So I would love to see him advance as well. So I'm pulling for Wednesday night, Hornets and Spurs. Those are my picks for Wednesday night's games. I'll put my money where my mouth is too. I'll parlay all 4 of those games. Why not? And we'll see if I come out a winner. And I picked Brooklyn to win, but I don't know. I would feel really bad if Cleveland lost. They're a good young team, and they probably should have been in the top 6, but they struggled, man. I think that's that youth too. So it would be tough to see them lose, but whatever. I'm picking Brooklyn anyway. So Brooklyn, Minnesota, Charlotte, and San Antonio. Those are my picks. Threw a little parlay down on it. So money line, obviously. We'll see if I come out a winner. Yeah. But that'll wrap it up for this portion of the podcast. Next up, me and Pete, we're breaking down some Rangers hockey for a little bit for all you puckheads. And opening day weekend in the MLB. So enjoy. So we're going to jump right into it, Pete, because when I recorded earlier, I already gave the people the rundown. So we're hopping right into it. And we'll start with the Rangers, just because I mentioned you're trademarking Pete Knows Puck.
Pete does know Puck. Pete knows a plethora of Puck.
So the Rangers walk me through it as a toddler, because I've loosely been following the season, as you know. And not the biggest hockey guy, but I've tried. I've tried to become a blue shirt. As you know, yes. I've had some of Rangers' Twitter follow me, so I'm official.
Sure, maybe you said it in that. Who was it again?
It was like a fan page. Hold on. It was BlueShirtsNation.com.
Just randomly.
At New York Ranger Fan Club. They have 44,700 followers and follow 16,900 people.
A real exclusive club.
You know what I did? I think I liked a tweet from just like the Rangers Twitter account, and then they followed me, and I was like, I guess I'm
they just
Rangers.
Run down to like,
I'm
follow,
a huge Rangers
follow.
Fan now. That's it.
You have
That's
to
how
be.
It goes. Yeah.
They made the first move.
They officially clinched a playoff spot, correct?
They did.
Did they clinch their division or no?
No, they are pretty much playing tonight against who is technically in first place, Carolina Hurricanes. They have 102 points. Rangers have 100 points, same amount of games played. So if the Rangers win tonight outright, then they're tied atop that division. You can argue if you, as a Rangers fan, if you actually want them to win the division based on how the first round's going to line up. But they're right there, which nobody really expect them to be, you know, top 2 teams in the division. If anything, I was pulling for a wild card. They're or nothing this season, but they're one of the best teams in the league, which was came out of nowhere, honestly.
Yeah, and I know they were like, they were rebuilding for, quote-unquote, rebuilding for a couple years. And they snuck into the playoffs last year? Or was it COVID? I was thinking.
It was the play-in tournament, pretty much. They lost to the Hurricanes. They got absolutely demolished by them because they were such a better team. You know, a regular playoff, they're not even in the conversation. But last year, COVID playoffs.
Yeah, they expanded playoffs. Yeah. So
this is their first real playoffs since 2017. 15, 5 years.
Yeah, when did they go to the Cup? 2014?
2014-15 season, they lost to the Kings.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare.
Yeah, and then they came close again, right? Didn't they lose in the finals? The Eastern Finals?
The Eastern Conference Finals, I think, yeah, 2015-16. They've been in the playoffs every year pretty much in this last two decades. You know, there's a couple spotty ones in between, but you know, like before Hank got there, it was pretty rough. But pretty much from 2005 to 2015, they were a lock.
Yeah, you guys went from Henrik Lundqvist to Igor Shesterkin. Did I say it right? I think I said
Shesterkin.
Right. Shesterkin. Damn it. Yeah.
I had it wrong for the first couple months.
I always keep saying it's Shesterkin, but
yeah.
Shesterkin. So he's dope.
Yeah,
what's the award for the best goaltender?
The Vezina. Vezina goes to the best goaltender. He's going to win it this year.
He'll probably win it this year, right? I feel like that's kind of a hands-down kind of thing.
Yeah.
So in terms of overall seeds, what are the Rangers look? They're like third, right? Or fourth?
Overall seed, they are currently fifth, tied with Toronto for 100 points, I believe, and they have a game in hand, I think.
Mm. So your thoughts on the season overall? I mean,
expectations pretty much blown out of the water, honestly.
Yeah,
I think I figured this was going to be one more of the last year of the rebuild, and next year we were going to see it. But this year, I would not be totally surprised if they found themselves in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah,
I think their easiest competition in the playoffs this year, if they get through the Penguins or the Capitals in the first round, which is who I think and hope they're going to play, will be in the Stanley Cup Finals if they get there.
Yeah, I feel like
any Western team.
It's tough because the Islanders have kind of owned New York hockey for like the past 3 or 4 years. And it seemed like that it was going to be kind of more of the same for at least the next few. And they kind of shit the bed completely. I don't know if it's like, did they peak? I know they lost a couple of players this past year.
The team's too old.
Like,
the team is not built young like the Rangers
are. Did they peak or did they just have an off year? Like, what is the trajectory of that team? Because I don't know. It just, for me, it feels like they had their moment and now it's like, okay, well, the Rangers are back and they're kind of always been like the better New York.
I mean,
as long as we've been like growing up watching sports,
absolutely.
The Rangers have always been much better, even though both of them haven't won anything. The Rangers have
in our lifetime,
The Rangers have always still been way more like competitive.
Yeah, it's a Knicks-Nets situation. The Nets were technically better than the Knicks fifth year, but New York was still a Nets Knicks town. You know, it's the same kind of deal in hockey. You know, I'm not trying to pump this little brother narrative, but Islanders have a couple good years and then we'll see. You know, I think they're going to be a little bit more back next year, but I don't see them. With the age of their team, and they signed two old guys like Clutterbuck and for like 1 year extensions. I'm like, that's not what you guys need to be doing right now. You need to be building from the base, not getting in these
they
old guys in the end.
Eberle, right, to the Kraken.
Yeah, the
expansion draft.
I know a lot of our Islanders fans friends were pretty upset about that.
Yeah, Eberle was like a big guy for them.
Yeah.
I knew that. He was like one of the only guys that I really knew on the Islanders just from like that core of players. So I'm surprised that they kind of let him walk. Well, not that they had a choice, but you can tag people.
Get a certain amount of roster spots to protect for an expansion draft.
Yeah. It's pretty nuts. But in terms of the Rangers, like they have so much young talent now, it feels like. And then
so much in the system too.
Yeah. And then they go from Hank to Shesterkin and Shesterkin.
There you go.
And it just feels like they got real lucky in terms of how everyone panned out. I know, like Kaapo Kakko, like he's got he hasn't really been like everything that they wanted from a number one, number two. Would they take him one or
he four? He was number two.
Two.
He was number two pick.
Two. Who was before him?
Jack Hughes, I think, was that there.
Jack Hughes is nasty.
I'm not
upset. For the rest of the season, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jack Hughes has easily performed better than Kaapo Kakko. I'm not going to deny that, but he's not bringing the Devils to a cup anytime soon.
That family's, like, nasty.
I mean, yeah.
They got three kids that, like, got drafted in the top 10 of the NHL draft, like, in, like, back-to-back-to-back years.
Yeah.
That's insane, bro. I found that out. I was like, oh, Jack Hughes. And then I, like, looked up his older brother, Quinn. Quinn Hughes on the Canucks, right?
The Canucks, yeah.
And, like, he got drafted top 10. And then they have, like, their third younger brother is, like, got drafted also. And I think
he
was at Michigan or something like that. It's insane.
Yeah, I think he'll be up in the league soon, I'm sure. Luke Hughes, right? Yeah. Luke.
Yeah, that's insane. Anyway, yeah, Rangers got a lot of young talent. So I'm happy for the Blue Shirt fans. They have been, I know, in terms of just our friends, I know that, like, the Islanders fans were always like, it's kind of like you.
They're quiet this year.
It's kind of like you and me with the Mets and Yankees. Like, I root for the Mets, but I don't expect you to root for the Yankees. I'm not going to, I wouldn't expect you to do that.
That would be really tough.
Like, Islanders fans, Rangers fans, like, I don't really know any of our Rangers fans who are, like, talking down, like, they're shitting on the Islanders and, like, talking trash about them and how bad they are. It's just kind of like, they're bad again.
It doesn't matter. It's not in my mind.
And then whenever the Rangers are bad, it's like the Islanders, like, even if they don't win anything, it's like, well, as long as the Rangers lose too, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So weird. It's so whack.
Yeah.
But we'll get to baseball now. So your overall thoughts with the Rangers, I know you're very, very happy with how they performed this year.
Yeah, I've never rooted for a team like this in my life who just keeps outperforming expectations. That's usually the only way around. They usually get to the World Series with the Mets in 2015 who lead 92% of the way and lose in five
games.
That's how
I felt with the Yankees back in, like, 2016. It's like, oh, it's a rebuild year, and then they were, like, they won seven games in the ALCS. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll do MLB opening weekend. It was a fun one. The Yankees won 2 out of 3 from the Red Sox, and the Mets took 3 out of 4 from the Nationals.
3 out of 4 should have been 4 out of 4.
Yeah, and tough loss. So we're recording this on Tuesday. I think I said that in the beginning of the podcast. But classic Mets meltdown in the 8th inning against the Phillies.
Yeah, I screamed very loud and hurt my wrist.
Yankees got clapped by the Blue Jays. It was only 3-0, but, like, they got clapped. Like, they didn't.
It just felt like that.
I think they mustered, like, 2 or 3 hits. Like, they didn't do anything.
No pressure.
The Blue Jays, Bo Bichette made, like, 2 or 3 ridiculously athletic double plays that were, like, really annoying. it's just not, like. I think the Blue Jays are going to – we'll start with the Mets. But, the Blue Jays, they pissed me off. So the Mets, the Phillies, I know you hate the Phillies. Alec Bohm. I hate this fucking place.
It's Philadelphia. How could you not have that opinion?
That was a whole thing. Did you see his, like, apology?
Yeah. I actually liked his apology. He's like, yeah, you know, I meant it in the moment. Don't anymore, even though maybe he does.
I think that's got to be, like, the way that you handle that situation.
Yeah, you own up to it immediately.
You address it and move on. Like, yeah, I said it. Heat of the moment. Sorry to the fans. I didn't actually mean it.
Yeah.
There you go. That's it.
It was the perfect way to end that.
Thoughts on the Mets opening weekend against the Nationals? Who impressed you the most?
Every single player that they picked up impressed me immensely. Eduardo Escobar played exactly like he did in spring training. He lit it up. I mean, Mark Hanna was hitting like 750. You know, I think he got on base 8 out of his first 11 plate appearances, which is insane. He's an on-base machine. You know, what do we like about Mark Hanna? He gets on base. Moneyball. And he's from the A's too. So Starling Marte, guy never played at a game of right field in his life, and he's making it look like it's his natural position out there. And listen, this is a weird thing to say. I didn't even notice that Grom was gone. McGill came in, pitched opening day like he would have done.
He had like an unbelievable an unbelievable opening day. Like, that was crazy. In contrast, Gerrit Cole kind of was horrible.
Oh, well, I mean, listen, perfectly reasonable explanations to why he had to throw a pitch 3 minutes later than he expected to because of Billy Crystal.
Well, you know, it messed with his mojo.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It did. Got in his head.
Stop defending him already, Yankees fans. My God.
Yeah, that was interesting. I can understand being like annoyed, like, all right, let's go, let's wrap this up. Like, I don't care about
it. Yeah, I'm Billy Crystal on the step of the dugout. What are you doing?
You Jesus can't be disrespecting Christ. Billy Crystal, though. You can't. I liked how Lindor played in the first four games. He got a few. I know he had
a home run
in the third game.
Yeah.
Drew a bunch of walks. He was getting on base. So
that got hit in the face.
Yeah, survived getting hit in the face. So did Pete Alonso. Also got hit in the face.
James McCann real close.
That's brutal. But I think the Mets pitching staff certainly showed that they were like, all right, well, you know, we're going to be without DeGrom, but I think we'll be fine.
They have enough starting depth to cover DeGrom for a month and a half.
Yeah, the lineup looked solid. Considered. I feel like it's exactly like what you wanted from a start. Obviously, that loss last night against the Phillies kind of took a little bit of the wind out of the sails, but you know, it happens.
I didn't like the Showalter hire when it happened. I was only so on it. I was like, okay, he's an old guy, he knows baseball, I guess, but you know, I'd prefer somebody maybe isn't. And then he impressed me every step of the way since then. And then the last two games were both bullpen mismanagement losses that would not have happened probably with better bullpen management. And that really kills me.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I'm not saying it would have been perfect. Or I'm not saying that I had the exact right answer. But when I was said to myself, you cannot bring in Trevor Williams right now, last night or two nights ago. And then that's exactly what happened. And then that's exactly when the rails fell off. I'm like, these are not decisions that I should be able to make easily from my couch that Buck Showalter and his advanced baseball knowledge spanning decades cannot make from the dugout step.
Yeah.
I don't know what, you know, happens. I still trust him. That's, you know, sort of for now. We'll see how tonight goes. But last night was a bad night.
The bullpen's always been the problem. For years at this point. Like, it's bad. It's bad.
Because we had a decent enough bullpen this year where if we went in with the exact same guys, I would have felt really comfortable. But we let lefty god Aaron Loop go for like $1 million to Los Angeles. I'm like, well, Steve Cohen, what are you doing? I mean, you've been my god for the past 2 years, essentially, and you let Aaron Loop go? He's probably our best reliever, especially now that Lugo has really been on the downturn, and I'm kind of getting fed up with it, honestly. And you don't sign Andrew Chafe, and you just let him go. Like,
you got Chase and Shreve, though. Yankee legend.
Listen, I'm perfectly fine with that. He's fine. Just don't put him in against the righty. I'm sorry, don't put Joey Rodriguez in against the righty. Or don't trade Miguel Castro for Joey Rodriguez for no reason.
We got the Miguel Castro experience the other day, where it's like sometimes he'll just walk like two batters on eight pitches and then he'll strike out the next three. Like, it really is just
a hard-throwing
whirlwind of emotions that you get with that guy. It's
so weird without the beard too.
It's brutal. Yeah. He does not look right in a Yankee uniform.
Yeah, it's very strange. And you know, listen, you could take him. We could do the swap, but just take him right back. Nobody was happy with this trade. No Yankees fans and no Mets fans. That's how you know how bad of a trade it is.
Just like whatever. It was like a whatever trade. Very, very strange. Very strange. The Yankee bullpen, in contrast, is really, really good, and they had to rely on them heavily in the first opening series because Cole went like 3 1/3.
Yeah, and that then, touched up by a sock.
Yeah, the next day Montgomery went 3 1/3. Like,
got hit. He got hurt, right?
Montgomery got hurt, but then he came back and he was all right.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so he like figured it out, you know. But not even it was who? Oh my god, I'm blanking out. Who pitched on Saturday? Severino,
yeah.
So no pitcher got past the fourth inning. Cole, I think, got Cole went four. Cole went four innings. Severino went three innings, and then Montgomery went 3 1/3.
Wow.
So not great.
That's complete direct opposite of what the Mets did pretty much. Yeah, they had the best starting opening weekend.
Not great in terms of like length. You know, they all had super high pitch counts.
Yeah.
And first two wins came on late spurs for the Yankees.
They walk off hits, yeah.
And then they walked it off on opening day, obviously. And then the next day they went and won 4-2, but they scored two in the bottom of the sixth. So it was tough for them. And scary. It was scary.
I would not say that if I was a Yankees fan, I'm not concerned about this season.
Yeah.
I don't know how comfortable you guys are. A week ago, 2 weeks ago,
I was like, I genuinely don't know what to expect.
Right. That's almost worse.
Like, there's so many question marks. Can the starting pitching hold up? The bullpen's good. Period. Like, the bullpen is good. The bullpen has been good for the past handful of seasons, and they're still good now. We don't even have Zach Britton, which is crazy.
You could need that if your starting pitching isn't.
Yeah, he's on 60-day DL. I don't think we got Tommy John. I got surgery on his UCL. Is that Tommy John?
That's Tommy John.
Was it Tommy John?
Yeah.
So he's end of last year. Yeah, he might come back towards the end of the year, but I don't even know. I'm not counting on him to save us or anything.
Yeah.
Severino, this is the first time his start on Saturday was the first time he started a game since the 2019 ALCS.
Wow, I forgot he did. That's crazy.
Yeah. That's insane.
How did he look? I mean, I thought from what I had, I only caught
the velocity was there.
Yeah.
He just was really trying to find out what pitches, what stuff did he have? You know, the velocity was there. The location, obviously, stuff is to be desired, but Cole had horrible location as well.
Yeah.
I don't think none of them went over 80 pitches. So, they're clocking at
hope not in 3-4
75 pitches in those, I think Severino ended with close to that, 65 pitches. Cole had 75.
Yeah.
And Montgomery, same thing.
That's too many if you're not getting to 5 innings.
They're just
not sustainable.
And luckily, the bats the first two games were alive, and they had some timely home runs. Giancarlo Stanton, the dude loves to play against the Boston Red Sox. it's unbelievable. If you bet, dating back to their last series in September, if you bet every game from then to now against the Red Sox, it's 9 games.
Okay.
Their last two series, I should say. So, the last 9 games they played against Boston. If you bet every one of those games for Stan to hit a home run, I think you'd be 5 or 6 for 9. he had 2 home runs in the first 2 days. And then dating back to last year, obviously, in Fenway, he went on that tear also. So, the guy just loves hitting Boston pitching. He's been the saving grace that he really makes me feel a lot better because I ragged on him going into last year pretty hard that he needed to step it up. And him and Judge were both studs last year. But the downside was Glaber stinks and DJ LeMahieu had a horrible season. He was injured on and off a little bit. And then he just was not that good.
Yeah.
Now he's pretty much having to fight for his spot in the lineup with Glaber.
Crazy.
Because Glaber can't play defense. And somehow that ended up screwing over DJ LeMahieu, which is crazy. Because Glaber can't play shortstop, DJ LeMahieu gets fucked over.
It doesn't.
This is me off. Because IKF, did you know IKF is related to Ralph Kiner? Interesting. I think he's fourth cousin. Third.
That makes sense now.
Michael K said that. He's they're third or fourth cousins or something like that.
Wow.
Interesting. He's he never met him, but yeah, it's funny.
You never met him?
No, never met him. Both cousins. The hell he's going to meet him for?
They were both around at the same time. He's not that young.
Yeah, so I thought that was funny.
But baseball family.
He's even been he's supposed to come in for defense, and I'm every time he hits the ball, I get kind of sketched out. It's weird. It's very weird.
What do you mean?
Concerning. Like he's made like 3 errors this weekend.
Oh, every time the ball hits him. Okay.
Yeah, if it's hit sharply, like I don't have like all the confidence in the world for him to pick it. He's also their third catcher on the depth chart.
Yeah.
Because he can catch.
Yeah, I remember seeing that in the show. Actually, I think I saw him catch him. I don't judge defense too harshly at the beginning of the season. You know, especially if you're coming from a Texas market to a New York market, I think he'll settle in. He's a player.
Donaldson is the one that I think.
I hated that for you guys.
I don't like Josh
Donaldson. No.
I mean, I'm gonna have to learn to like him way more. He definitely won me over in the first game of the season. He was the one who delivered the walk off hit.
Yeah, of course.
I was like, all right, but like I never liked him when he was obviously not on the Yankees.
Right. He was in the Braves, and I obviously hated this guy.
I had to get over that, but he I think he's like a huge key to how this season goes, because if he hits like 260, 265, 270 and hits, you know, 25 home runs, 25, yep. 30 home runs.
You can't ask for more out of what, a 39-year-old or something, 38-year-old?
I think he's like 37 now at this point.
Okay, you know? Still though.
Well, not, yeah, it's definitely up there in yeah. age. It's like pure gray now. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah, bringer of gray.
Oh, man. What, let's see. He's 36. He's 36. So he's like, if he somehow is able to have a good season, like a solid season, then it's going to be a huge bonus. LeMahieu and Gleyber has to get figured out. I just can't believe that LeMahieu's the one that suffers because Gleyber can't play defense. Because they had to go out, they get IKF. Now he's suddenly the starting shortstop. You can't rely on his bat.
Yeah.
And he's literally in there only for defense because Gleyber Torres stinks at shortstop. It's insane.
It's weird. I hate these situations when you have guys you don't know where to place because of other guys who can't play. Like JD Davis is that for the Mets. You know, sometimes, well, he's not so much anymore because he stinks at hitting. So I'd rather have Gleyber than JD Davis at this point. But like when he was hitting, he couldn't field. They were throwing him in left and he was having a nightmare out there. It's the same thing.
Yeah. So because like we signed Rizzo, so our first base problem is solved. LeMahieu.
You re-signed Greg Bird.
He did. He's somehow back in the minor leagues. Boy, what a story he was. That was so. That I can't believe he just.
It is so surprised to see him
flamed
back.
Out, bro. Anyway, we had Rizzo. We re-signed Rizzo. Okay, great. I love Rizzo.
Yeah.
So he's in there. Solves our first base issue, which was the biggest problem entering last year. So we get Rizzo, and then you think LeMahieu in there at second base, like Gold Glover, he's fine there. Perfect yeah. scenario. And it would all work out if Gleyber was just a good shortstop. Average. If he was an average shortstop, it would work. Because you just put him at short, Donaldson's at third, and then in the outfield, you platoon Stan as the DH, and then Gallo, Judge.
Joey Gallo. Who's in center?
Hicks. But he'll get hurt. He'll get hurt after like 20 games. He'll tweak an ankle. He'll like pull a hamstring or something. And
I mean, he always gets hurt. Center.
I don't think he's played over 60 games in like 3 years.
Who, Hicks?
Yeah.
If Stanton can play center at all, then I think it solves a lot of your issue.
No, Judge plays center.
So where does Stanton play? So who's in right?
When Hicks isn't playing, it's Judge and center.
Hicks throws everything off.
Judge and center, stand and right, Gallo and left. And then when Hicks does play, which is our best defensive alignment.
Yeah.
Because Hicks is a good center fielder.
Right.
He just gets hurt. And then Judge and right and Gallo and left, those are all like above average player, Judge and Gallo. Gallo is a Gold Glove winner in right field, but in left field, he hasn't had really any problems. Judge is a beast of a fielder, and Hicks is a very good center fielder.
Yes.
He just gets hurt. And the most games he's ever played as a Yankee, I think, is like 115.
Do you prefer, how does Gleyber do a third?
That's what I was thinking, like, partly. I'm like, okay, well, do they
try to
make him, they try to make him a third baseman? I don't think they've tried that at all, and I don't think they will. But
he just got to hold it down.
I can't imagine he would do any better at third base than at shortstop. I can't.
Depends what his issues are. If his issues are range and throw, then I think he'd have a slightly better time at least, but I don't know.
All right. Let's pivot to the final part here of any surprises around the league. First of all, who's like a sleeper team? Because I have a sleeper team, and I think I've said to you before.
I thought it was a sleeper team, but then I see everybody saying that the Mariners are going to be surprising this year. So maybe I got to pick a different sleeper team because they're pretty much
they were a sleeper West Coast team match. Last year, and they almost made the playoffs. And now a lot of people are like, yeah, they're going to be very good. Which I don't know. They still have the Astros in the division. The Astros are still really good, even though they don't have Correa or Springer anymore.
Yeah, that drives me crazy. I won't be able to look at the Astros the same until everybody from 2017 is gone.
They're just still around, bro.
I know.
They're just still around.
It really bothers me. And I used to like Alex Bregman so much, man.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think the Brewers are going to regress this year. I think the Padres are going to regress this year.
Yeah, they're off to a hot start, the Padres.
Yeah, they played the Diamondbacks. Let's pump the brakes.
Okay, that's fair.
I was looking at the Guardians, and I was like, wow, these two, the offensive juggernaut. And then I look after it, and it's still lit up, almost 16 runs to the Royals in the past couple of games. I'm like, maybe the pitching's not there anymore.
Yeah. They lost 3-1 to the Royals, 1-0, and then they scored 27 runs in the next two games.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, 17-3 and 10-7. And now they're actually playing the Reds right now. You know who's on fire for them? They got this kid, Kwan. I don't know who he is. Never heard of him before in my entire life. But he is, their left fielder. Stephen Kwan, I think his name is.
Oh, I was like, Kwan, he's got one name? That's sick.
Stephen Kwan, he is in four games, he is 9-13 with 5 walks.
Oh God. I love
so
that.
He has been on base pretty much every single at bat. He's been on base.
And he's outfield.
Three RBIs. So he's in the first 3.5 games, he's batting .692, 3 RBIs. And has a 1.789 OPS.
Oh my God.
He's a beast. So he's like what we call off to a hot start.
Yeah.
I was saying I like the Tigers a lot. I think I said that to you before.
Yes. I am excited to see Akil Badu this year. I'm always excited to see Javi. They got they got that young kid too who just came up, right? He's got a weird name.
Torkelson.
Yeah.
Spencer Torkelson sounds like a Pokemon. And they also have another kid who I think he's injured right now. I don't know what his injury is, but Riley Green, he's another top 5 prospect. So he's going to be up there before summer hits.
Yeah.
He'll be back. He'll be on the roster.
Yeah, that AL Central might be scary.
Yeah, I mean, the Twins.
I'm not the Twins.
I'm never high on the Twins. The Royals will fall off, and I think the Guardians will also fall off. So I think personally, probably just be between the White Sox and Detroit. But who knows? One of those three other teams might mess around and actually be good. I think the Angels are just going to blow again somehow. The Angels are just not going to be good.
One of the biggest tragedies in sports is that Mike Trout will never see the
it's only been in the playoffs once.
You'll never see the ALCS.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
One time. Oh my God.
It's worse. It's worse than Henrik Lundqvist winning a Stanley Cup. Because at least he got there.
Yeah.
He's not even gonna come close. Which is
he's never gonna come close. And they have Ohtani now too, Rendon. Like
Rendon doesn't even like baseball.
That's true. He
literally has said that.
He actually hates baseball, yeah.
I hate him. I hate him so much.
So San Diego's 4-1. They don't have Tatis for like how many? Like 2 months, 3 months, something like that?
Yeah, I think it's for June.
The Rockies 3-1. I think San Fran's gonna take a huge step back.
Yeah.
I don't think they're gonna be able to maintain what they did last year. Personally, I really don't. They were like an anomaly last year, it felt like, you know?
Oh, Buster Posey decided to retire, and he was having a great comeback season last year. I mean, you know, he's old as hell, and he's a catcher, which can't be easy, but...
Oh, man, is Longoria not on the Giants anymore? So sad. Did Longoria retire?
I mean, if he did, I missed it. I was just assumed he would still be there.
Oh, he is on the Giants. I think he might just be hurt then.
Maybe.
He's not listed here on the when I'm looking at the roster right now.
Interesting.
He might be injured. Yeah, because he's not even listed on the roster.
Yeah,
so he's probably on the IL.
I don't know. I don't like the NL West.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see. We'll see how they shape out. But I'm high on the Tigers, and did you see the Marlins just aren't playing Jazz Chisholm?
What do you mean? I saw a highlight of him against the Giants.
They weren't playing him apparently. Well,
Who else is the Marlins playing that they can't play their best player?
I saw he was liking tweets apparently they're free Jazz Chisholm. Yeah, he's played in 3 games. He's healthy, perfectly healthy. And he's played 3 games. And I think they batted him eighth or ninth in the lineup, too. Who are the Marlins?
Birdie! They're playing John Birdie! Why?
See? What's their lineup tonight? Is he even playing? He's batting ninth. And he's playing at second base.
I mean, he's a leadoff hitter for there ever was, my man. That doesn't make any sense. Marlins is such a shit.
Soler, they're doing that thing with the power hitter batting first. Jorge Soler is the DH, he's batting first. Rojas is second. Jazz Chisholm is your.
He's your best player.
He's your best player. Okay. We're on the same page there. I do not understand. He's 3-9 with 3 RBIs and a home run. I don't get it. I don't get it. But I just saw a bunch of tweets. People were like, why are you not playing Jazz Chisholm? And then he was liking tweets saying because the Marlins manager doesn't know what he's doing. And Jazz liked that tweet. Mattingly. I don't know how that guy's still the manager of the Marlins, but he is.
I stopped myself because I was like, I was about to say, who's the manager again? And then I was like, oh my God, it's still Tom Mattingly.
Yeah, that's insane, right?
I don't understand. I mean, that team is so much pitching.
That's why Jeter left, though, is not because Donnie Baseball, but because of he wanted to spend money. The Marlins owner was like, no.
Marlins don't have money.
Jeter was like, well, look, I did all this. I built up a solid young core. Now it's time to go out and sign an all-star. I think the report was he wanted to sign Castellanos, and the Marlins were like, no. So he was like, well, if you're not going to let me spend money, then I'm leaving.
I don't understand. Exactly. Who says no to that?
I'm pretty sure that's what Sabathia said. CeCe?
I'll take CeCe's word in anything.
He said that on his podcast. He's like, Jeter wanted to spend money, and the Marlins said no, so he left. All right.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What an anomaly of the team. Such good starting pitching that just doesn't either play because they're hurt or can't hit, so they have no run support.
Mickey Cabrera needs 30 hits. No, less. He needs 15.
For 3,000?
3,000. He needs 9. He's at 2,991.
Yeah, well, he'll easily get there. It's not even a question then.
Yes, sir. That's also why I'm rooting for the Tigers this year. it's gonna be a good year. They have Javi. They have some young talent. Their pitching staff is super young.
They have a pitcher too, right?
Manning, I think. Matt Manning, I think his name is.
I had another one.
But they he was like a top prospect as well before he came up. So the Tigers built like a really good farm system. So they have a bunch of young talent. And then you have Miguel Cabrera, who's milestone hunting this year, which is nice.
Yeah, I wouldn't take that lineup for granted, man. I could really do some damage against you.
Yeah, I want to
speaking
see
about who got it, fucking Andrew Chafin too. I'm so annoyed.
Let's see what does the lineup look like tonight. I want to see what Detroit's
trying. They're losing 5-3 to the Sox right now.
They lost 5-3 to the Sox.
Oh, lost already, damn. All right, well there you go.
Was that today? Yeah, that was today. Javi hit a bomb. Doubled to left too. They blew it. They were winning 3-0. And then they blew it. And the Red Sox won 5-3.
Yikes.
What are you trying out there? Grossman. Oh, they have Jonathan Shoup.
Shoup.
Baez, Candelario, Cabrera's the DH now. And they got Torkelson was a third baseman. They moved him to first so Miggy could DH. Not bad.
They don't need Miggy doing too much extra work at this point.
Yeah, not bad. I think Riley Green's an outfielder too, so they'll bring him in. Nice. Go Tigers.
Coach O.
All right, any last words, Pete, before I send you off? We're going to wrap it up here.
Let's see. My last thing I'd like to say is that I was really excited for the Mets this season. I was still actually really excited for when they lost that first game. And then I found out that in 1993 they started 3-0, blew two back-to-back games because of bullpen, and then wound up losing 103 games. So I'm expecting that again this year.
Oh, that's nice. This is very optimistic of you.
If there's any Mets fans listening, I just wanted to get that into your heads and not have any expectations. This way you can't be hurt.
Excellent. Everyone's on the same page now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me, Pete. I'm
going to
wrap up
me.
After.
Bye, brother.
All right, everyone. That'll wrap it up for this episode of From My Point of View. Thank you all, as always, for listening. And I will talk to you all next Wednesday.
I've been a throw up the sex in a uh-huh. And I can put you in. I can put you in. I've been a throw up the sex in a see the whole city from this balcony. Back in 2019, I was outside freely, but now they got it out for me. I don't care what frat you was in, you can't out for me. Keep dreaming. Pineapple juice, I give a sweet, sweet, sweet semen. I know what they like, so I just keep cheesing. Hard drive full of heat seeking. Trying to come the same day as Jack rethinking. You don't need Givenchy, you need Jesus. Why do y'all sleep on me? I need you.